Hello again. This is Carol Bond, returning with the Decatur and Herald Review, dated November 3rd. We'll continue now with a reading of the obituaries. We'll begin with William John Bill Collins, 67, of Shelbyville, formerly of Neoga and Hoffman Estates, Illinois, died at 4 p.m. Sunday, November 1st, in Shelby Memorial Hospital. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, November 14th, in the Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Shelbyville, with Reverend Mark Sanders officiating. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Saturday, November 14th, in the funeral home. Burial will follow in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville, with military rites by the Shelby County Honor Guard. Memorials may be given to the Shelby County Honor Guard. Rella Wavelin Cordray Four, 84, of Lakewood, Illinois, passed away Saturday, October 31st at 2 p.m. in Shelby Memorial Hospital in Shelbyville, with her family by her side. As were Rella's wishes, private family services will be held with interment in Mount Carmel Cemetery in Shelby County. Memorials may be given in Rella's memory to the Shelbyville Senior Citizen Center in Shelbyville. Arrangements are entrusted to Lockhart Green Funeral Home, Shelbyville. Keith Barthelemy, born September 7, 1982, passed away suddenly on October 31st. There will be a memorial visitation in Keith's honor on Wednesday, November 4th at Brintlinger Funeral Home from 5 until 6:30. Please, no flowers. John McLean Enright, 62, of Shelbyville, died at 7:40 a.m. Saturday, October 31st, in Shelbyville Rehabilitation and Healthcare Center, Shelbyville. A celebration of John's life will be held from 5 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, November 10th, in the Christian Life Center of the First Church of the Nazarene in Shelbyville. Howe and Yaki Funeral Home in Shelbyville is in charge of arrangements. Memorials may be given to Denver Bible Church, 4085 Independence Court, Wheat Ridge, Colorado, 80033. Alice Louise Kaiser, that's K-A-Y-S-E-R, 95, of Strasburg, Illinois, formerly of Milwaukee, Oregon, near Portland, Oregon, died at 8:20 a.m. Sunday, November 1st, in Heartland Christian Village, Neoga, Illinois. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, November 5th, in the Strasburg United Methodist Church, with Reverend Kathy Lewis officiating. Arrangements are by Howe and Yaki Funeral Home, Strasburg. Memorials may be given to the Strasburg United Methodist Church. George Ridgway, Jr., 85, of Cerro Gordo, passed away Sunday, November 1st, 2015. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Thursday, November 5th, at the Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home in Decatur. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, November 4th, 2015, at the funeral home in Decatur. Burial will be at the Cerro Gordo Cemetery in Cerro Gordo. Military rites will be provided by the Cerro Gordo American Legion, Post 117. Memorials may be made to the Hope Welty Library in Cerro Gordo, Illinois. Mary Ann Broski, 79, of Decatur, passed away peacefully Friday, October 30th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital, surrounded by her family. funeral liturgy to celebrate the life of Mary Ann Broski will be 10 a.m. Friday, November 6th, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, November 5th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church or the Alzheimer's Association. Jody Deanne Stratzer, age 52, of Decatur, died peacefully on Sunday of this week. A family-led visitation and memorial service celebrating Jody's life will be Thursday, November 5th at Cumberland Presbyterian Church, 219 South Lincoln Street in Bethany. Visitation will be from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. with a service to follow. Pastor Brett Bone and Adam McReynolds will officiate. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is assisting the family. Memorials to Jody's family. Let's move on now to hear what some of our columnists are saying today. These are the letters to Abby. Dear Abby, my friendships have always included people of different races, religions, nationalities, sexual orientations, professions, etc. A few years ago, I had an experience that was both devastating and humbling on several different levels. It caused me to do a lot of introspection and self-improvement, which led to my becoming a more empathetic person. Over the last few years, I have distanced myself from old friends and acquaintances who were racist, sexist, homophobic, etc. I've replaced them with new relationships with people who embrace diversity. Some of the people I no longer see ask me why we don't talk or get together anymore. I don't want to give them excuses like I've been too busy. How do I explain to them that I don't enjoy associating with people who hold bigoted views? And this is signed Open-Minded in the Midwest. Dear Open-Minded, because you no longer wish to associate with them, why not just respond with the truth? Say, as you may know, I had an experience a few years ago that was life-changing. It made me reevaluate my life and my relationships, so I decided to edit them down and spend more time with people who think the way I do about life. The next letter is this. Dear Abby, I am a middle-aged man who lost my wife to cancer 2.5 years ago. We had no children. I'm now feeling very alone. I don't seem to fit in anywhere. My old guy friends avoid me, and our married couple friends leave me out because I am not a couple anymore. I understand that because they all do couple things, but even my family seems to have set me aside. When my wife was alive, we would be invited to my siblings' homes for dinners during the holidays and other times. Now I often don't even get a phone call. There are times I feel like I have been cast off by everyone. Please help, Abby. Signed, Lonely Kansan. Dear Lonely Kansan, I'll try. With most married couples, the wives are the ones who make the social plans. This may be why you aren't hearing from your couple friends. Why your family would choose to exclude you at a time when you need them is something I can't explain, but they may tell you if you pick up the phone and talk to them about it. Because you find you have time on your hands and no prospects, it's time to establish yourself as an eligible single male. Research singles groups in your area. Go online and put your profile on some of the singles sites. Get involved in volunteer activities. Join a dance class, a yoga class, a gym. There are plenty of women out there waiting to be found, but you won't find any of them sitting home waiting for the phone to ring. Today in his column, Dr. Keith Roach is talking about cholesterol. Dear Dr. Roach, several years ago I started going to a new doctor who said that the way to get the correct cholesterol number is to divide the HDL into the LDL, and if the answer is not 2.5 or lower, I have a problem and should be taking steps to lower it. I am currently interviewing other doctors as I have stopped going to this doctor for personal reasons. My previous doctor stated that you subtract the HDL from the LDL, and if it is below 100, it's okay, which is correct. I am 68 years old now and in very good health. I was told by a doctor I met while visiting another state that he'd never heard of the 2.5 solution. And here's Dr. Roach's reply. There are four main cholesterol numbers acquired from a routine blood test: total cholesterol, HDL cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, and triglycerides. It's hard to comprehend four numbers all at once, so you have mentioned two approaches to evaluate the cholesterol picture in a single number. The first is the HDL-LDL ratio. Some authorities have described this number as the single best predictor of heart disease from the standpoint of blood cholesterol levels. The higher the ratio, the higher the risk. A ratio of 2.5 is extremely good with a very low risk of heart disease. A ratio of 3.5 or lower is generally considered desirable. At that level, the risk for heart disease is about half the average. The average ratio is 5. A ratio of 9.6 is associated with double the average risk. The second is the non-HDL cholesterol, which is what you get when you subtract HDL from total cholesterol. This also has met with considerable acceptance, and a number below 100 is considered in the desirable range. Personally, I think that since HDL cholesterol has independent predictive ability on the likelihood of coronary disease from both LDL and total cholesterol, I use both absolute numbers. I think both the ratio and non-HDL cholesterol are useful, but don't tell the whole story. Remember that cholesterol is only a part of the story for heart disease risk. Smoking and blood pressure are at least as important. Family history is too, and often is unappreciated. Diet, exercise, and stress management are very important, and most of us physicians don't pay enough attention to these. We're going to return now to the front page for an article I missed. This is Dateline Decatur, and it was written by Tony Reed. The headline is "Woman Bites Boyfriend During Dispute." I should clarify that this is the front page of a local section. A pregnant Decatur woman told police she was forced to bite her live-in boyfriend multiple times to prevent him from choking her. Police called to the couple's apartment at 2 a.m. Saturday in the 1400 block of East Wellington Way, said they found the 26-year-old boyfriend with multiple bite wounds on his right forearm, left shoulder, and a laceration probably caused by a bite to the tip of his left index finger. The girlfriend, age 24, who is 5 months pregnant and shares two other children with the boyfriend, said she had used her teeth to defend herself. In sworn statements, police said an argument between the couple over the boyfriend's drinking had escalated and become physical. She advised that during the physical altercation, he had stood behind her and placed his arms around her neck and squeezed, blocking her airway and causing her to have difficulty breathing. Officer Christopher Cohn said the previous in the statements that she completed. She advised, this is a quote, she advised that while he had her in a chokehold, she was able to bite his arm in an attempt to get out of the neck restraint. The girlfriend said she was attacked once more by her boyfriend, who tried to put her in the same chokehold and then knocked her to the floor and sat on her. She told police she bit him again and also bit his finger to try to get him off of her. That's a quotation. Noting the bite marks on the boyfriend, police said they didn't observe any injuries to his girlfriend. The boyfriend told police his girlfriend wanted to throw him out of the apartment while he wanted to sleep on the couch because he had nowhere to go. He said he had fought with her and pinned her down, quote, only because he was trying to get her off of him. Police booked him on a charge of aggravated domestic battery and domestic battery. His girlfriend was booked on a charge of domestic battery. The girlfriend is free on $1,500 bond with the condition she has no contact with her boyfriend. He remained in the Macon County Jail on Monday night in lieu of posting $20,000 in bond. If he does bond out, he is ordered to have no contact with his girlfriend. We'll read now from a column headlined Briefs. And the first article, it actually was written about yesterday, A Woman Irons Man's Face. A Decatur couple who got into what police describe as a heated argument early Sunday ended up with the woman allegedly ironing the man's face and forearm with a hot iron. Officers called to the apartment the woman shares with her live-in boyfriend in the 1000 block of East Lincoln Avenue said the burns looked, quote, significant enough that they would most likely cause permanent scarring. The female suspect, age 52, was jailed on a charge of aggravated domestic battery. Mount Zion Food Drive. The 6th annual Mount Zion Community Food Drive will be from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday, November 5th in Mount Zion Lutheran Church, 1475 West Main Street, Mount Zion. Proceeds will benefit the Northeast Community Fund and Mount Zion United Methodist Community Food Pantry. Donations of paper products, health and hygiene supplies, monetary donations, or non-perishable food will be accepted. For information, call Patty Underwood at 433-4785. In Decatur, there is this news. The 700 block of South Lake Ridge Avenue between East Cantrell Street and Irving Drive will be closed to through traffic between 8 a.m. today and about 3 p.m. Tuesday, November 10th. Work will be done to repair a water valve, weather permitting. The next headline, Girlfriend Too Pretty. A 51-year-old Decatur woman told police her boyfriend, angry that people kept saying how pretty she was, punched her in the face early Saturday so, quote, she would be ugly, end quote. Police arrested the boyfriend, 57, and he was jailed on a charge of committing domestic battery while having a prior conviction for the same offense. In sworn statements, the woman told police they had been drinking all night while people kept coming up to her and saying, "How beautiful I look." She had later argued over the remarks with her boyfriend of 12 years, who, quote, cannot handle it when people say that, end quote, about her. They were walking in the 900 block of North Van Dyke Street around 5:30 a.m. when she said he punched her with a closed fist. Police found her with a bloody face and a swollen top lip. Man pushed down steps, indicator. Police allege the 24-year-old live-in girlfriend of a 75-year-old Decatur man pushed him over Saturday morning and stole his satellite television remote control before smashing it because she was angry with him. Sworn police statements say the victim suffered pain after he was pushed down some steps at his home in the 800 block of North Dunham Street. The suspect told arresting officers she had become angry with the victim for talking bad about her infant nephew. She was jailed on charges of aggravated battery involving a person aged over 60, domestic battery, theft, and criminal damage. Friends of Argenta seek parade participants and spectators for its annual Veterans Day parade at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 7th, starting at Argenta Oriana High School. Rides will be available for veterans. Lineup begins at 10:30 a.m. To reserve a spot in the parade, call Dina Bowman at 521-6981. That's area code 217. A headline of interest on the money page. This is under national and international news. The writer is Laura Neergaard of the Associated Press. Calorie counts make little impact. And this is Dateline Washington. Tracking calories at chain restaurants is supposed to become easier next year, but new studies raise questions about whether the counts actually make a difference for diners and eateries. Some restaurants already post calorie accounts. New York City was first in the country to require it, and 6 years later, research say seeing the caloric consequences didn't automatically lead to leaner choices. New York University researchers used receipts and surveys at McDonald's, Burger King, KFC, and Wendy's to track customer purchases. In New York City, where menus were labeled, calories averaged between 804 and 839 calories per meal, essentially the same as the 802 to 857 calories at fast food locations in New Jersey that didn't post calorie content. Beginning in December 2016, chain restaurants and certain other retailers that sell prepared food will have to list calorie content on their menus. As to whether customers will take notice, researchers reported Monday that just over a third of customers noticed calorie counts on the chain's menus last year, compared with about half when the law took effect in 2008, and 9% claimed to use them to order fewer calories. There may be greater effect at different kinds of restaurants, cautioned Associate Professor Brian Elbell of NYU Langone Medical Center. A second study, also in the journal Health Affairs, raises the possibility that menu labeling might have more of an effect on what restaurants offer than on customer ordering habits. Research at Johns Hopkins University used a database that collects calorie content from 66 large U.S. chains to compare menus from restaurants that voluntarily list calorie counts in all of their locations around the country. For example, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A, Panera, and Starbucks. With the rest, menus of the voluntarily posting chains averaged nearly 140 fewer calories per item, researchers reported. While these restaurants do boast calorie-packed products, quote, there are more healthier options on those menus, end quote, that bring down the per-item average, said study co-author Julia Wolfson, a fellow at Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. The Entertainment section features this article from Beverly Hills, California, provided by the Tribune News Service. Headline is, New PBS Series Explores Human Brain. The last great unknown territory on Earth doesn't lie at the bottom of the sea or in the Arctic Circle or in the molten Earth's core, but right here in the human brain. That's what neuroscientist Dr. David Eagleman says in his new PBS series, The Brain, with David Eagleman, airing on Wednesdays. The way we structured these six episodes, they're all about the big questions, he says, in a conference room here. Quote, what is reality? Who am I? How do I decide who's in control? Who will we be? These are questions that happily are evergreen, so we don't have to worry about some new piece of data coming along next year that will suddenly overturn this question of what is reality. One of the major puzzles that has confounded man since Aristotle is how we comprehend the world. Quote, your entire reality takes place in this closed theater of your brain, end quote, says Eagleman, who holds joint assignments in neuroscience and psychiatry at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. Quote, and it, at various times, has more or less to do with what's happening in the outside world and what can happen, for example, when you go to bed and dream at night, is that the theater keeps running and the actors keep acting and you have this whole virtual reality that you take to be reality. And the same thing happens as somebody becomes demented. There are many different aspects to dementia, but one of the issues is that somebody can confuse what's real. It has less and less anchoring to the outside world, end quote. One of the most interesting studies regarding Alzheimer's disease revealed that what we do as we age has a profound effect on the brain's function. Quote, one of the things we cover on the show has to do with a very fascinating study about hundreds of nuns and priests who all agree to donate their brains upon their death, says Eagleman. And this has been going on for a number of years now, and the researchers were really surprised when they discovered that about a third of the brains, when they looked at them under the microscope at autopsy, had the signs of Alzheimer's disease in them. In other words, the tissue was being ravaged by Alzheimer's, and yet none of the cognitive symptoms were apparent when the police were alive. Why? It's because, for example, the nuns who lived together in these convents kept very cognitively active. They're cognitively fit because they're socializing. They've got tasks. They're doing things. As opposed to many people who, for example, retire and sit around, don't do much of anything, and then they have cognitive decline. So this has led to a new concept which we cover in the show about cognitive reserve. If you keep your brain active, you're making new pathways. You're finding new ways to get from A to B, even as parts of the tissue are dropping out. We'll need to stop here. The article is somewhat longer. This interesting series is on PBS on Wednesdays, so local listings should be checked. This has been Carol Bond with the November 3rd issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. I really look forward to reading with you again.